Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwen Cheltimer, and our guest this week, that one-woman crime wave, Vicky Delaney. You've just launched your latest story, Elementary, She Read. Could you tell us about your new heroines, the setting for the novel, and how it's going to affect problems Gemma and Jane face?
Okay. The book is set, as I sort of alluded to a bit earlier, in the Sherlock Holmes bookshop and emporium. And one of the things I discovered when I first had the idea for this is that there's actually not a stretch to think of a bookstore totally dedicated to Sherlock Holmes. When you think of all the movies, the TV shows, all the books, what they call the pastiche, which is all the modern variations of Sherlock Holmes, nonfiction about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, his contemporaries, you know, and then you put in a shelf, as they do, of gaslight mysteries, meaning mysteries set sort of in the late Victorian Edwardian age. And along with all the merchandise, there's everything you could possibly imagine dedicated to Sherlock Holmes, from, you know, card sets, tea sets, teapots, playing cards, dish towels, games, puzzles, action figures, cardboard cutouts. You could easily stock a shop with all this stuff.
A whole shop.
And once I realized that bookstore, I thought, what a great idea that it would be fun to be able to just have people come in the store and I would kind of match them with a Sherlock book that I think they would like, and that would be just great fun. So as soon as I started working on the book, the main character, Gemma Doyle, became fairly Sherlockian herself. She's English, she's now living in the United States, her last name is Doyle. Her uncle insists that they're relatives of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. But she has that mind. She has that mind that can notice detail in the way a person is dressed, the way they speak, the way they're standing. She can seemingly pull facts out of thin air. Of course, she can always explain everything that she does and that she observes. She has a memory for detail. She has a memory for facts that she wants to remember. She has a very poor memory for anything she doesn't want to remember. And she's not necessarily the easiest person to get along to. Her social skills can be slightly awkward, like Sherlock Holmes. So it's up basically to her best friend, Jane Wilson, who owns the Mrs. Hudson's Tea Room next door to the bookstore, to keep her on an even keel and keep her in line.
So they've become friends when they meet in this little place.
That's right. Yes, that's right. And Jane opens the tea room next door to the bookstore.
So, are they partners?
They're partners in the business, because Gemma and her uncle own half of the tea room.
Uh-huh.
So they're partners in business, and
they're not partners in solving mysteries?
Yes. And they are partners in solving mysteries, because more for the author's convenience than the characters themselves. Because if you think of Sherlock Holmes, what would Sherlock Holmes be without Dr. Watson? Essentially, not a very interesting character.
Uh-huh.
There are a couple of Conan Doyle stories in which Dr. Watson doesn't appear, which are not very well known because they're not very good.
Uh-huh.
So, in fact, you need a Dr. Watson to humanize Sherlock Holmes, to bring him down to our level, so we see Sherlock through Dr. Watson's eyes, not through Sherlock's own eyes. In this book, the point of view character is Gemma, but Jane is always there to sort of point out to the reader sometimes, to Gemma and to the reader through Gemma, that maybe she should be a little more circumspect. You know, maybe she shouldn't be baiting the police officer, Detective Estrada, quite as much as she does. And so I think that Jane provides a balance that Gemma needs.
Right. Well, that sounds good. So tell us a bit more about the setting.
Okay, actually it's set in the fictional town of West London on Cape Cod. For a couple of reasons. I pretty much had any place to set the book that I wanted to. I just sort of looked at a map. And cozy mysteries work well when they're set in tourist locations, not only from the point of view of the story, where you have lots of people coming through, through town, so it gives you lots of suspects, lots of, you know, chance for people to be bumped off and suspects and old friends and new friends and all that, but also readers often like to read a book that's set in a place they go. So, as you know, my earlier series, the Lighthouse Library series, is set in the Outer Banks, and a lot of people have told me that they picked that book up when they were on vacation in the Outer Banks because they liked reading about the setting.
Yes.
So that's a large part of the reason that I chose Cape Cod, because it's a tourist destination. I also wanted the New England aspect of it, because Gemma is English, she's running the Sherlock Holmes bookstore, which, by the way, is located on 222 Baker Street in West London, Massachusetts. So I wanted the New England aspect of it. The town is fictional. It's called West London because it has to have a Baker Street. Mm-hmm. But if anybody who knows the area, it's actually the town of Chatham. Uh-huh. So that another reason for that is Chatham has the Atlantic. It's on a peninsula. Peninsula on Cape Cod, Atlantic Ocean on one side, Nantucket Sound on the other, which is a great opportunity for atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ocean works really well for that.
So you went visiting and digging, did you, in Chatham?
I've been visiting and poking around Chatham, and my daughter and I went to a little town, and we're sitting there having our little lunch on a nice veranda, and I look across the street, and there's this perfect little shop that is just my image now of the bookstore. A little old house painted bright, bright yellow, converted into a shop with, shop on the bottom floor, something else on the top. So that's the image I have now of the Emporium.
Wonderful. Well, now, how about reading from Elementary, she read?
Sure, I'd be happy to. This scene is quite short, but it's fairly near the beginning. What has happened is, so actually, I'll fill in a little bit for our listeners about the origin of the plot. This is true. In the year 2007, the world's most expensive magazine was offered for sale by Sotheby's London. It was offered at £400,000, which is round about $700,000 Canadian dollars, roughly. And the reason it was so expensive, it is the world's most expensive magazine, and it's Beaton's Christmas Annual of 1887, which is the first time Sherlock Holmes appeared in print in A Study in Scarlet. In 2007, the book didn't get the opening bid, so it was withdrawn from auction. And it has not been heard of again. So whether the original owner kept it, whether he or she sold it privately, we don't know. And that's an absolutely true story. So now we come to what does a good mystery author do, but take a interesting bit of fact and turn it into fiction, that Gemma Doyle finds this magazine hidden in her bookstore. And thus, and that's the beginning of the plot of this. How did this incredibly expensive magazine, first of all, is it real or is it a copy, which it could be? How did it come to be hidden in her bookstore? And why is it hidden in her bookstore? And who hid it? So she sets about, being Gemma Doyle, to find out. So from the section that I'm going to read right now, they have tracked down the person who, through her deductive skills, she tracked down the person who left the bookstore. She comes back to her house. Various stuff happens. She comes back to her house in the company of the police, and they find that her house has been ransacked while she was away. And this gives you a little bit of an insight into Gemma Doyle's thought process.
Okay.
"I'll be here," I said. "I appear to have a lot of cleaning to do. I'd better start with the kitchen." "How'd you know the kitchen's been ransacked?" Estrada said. "I didn't tell you that, and you can't see into the kitchen from the entrance." "Do you doubt everything you're told, Detective Estrada? Must be a very difficult way to go through life." She bristled. "It was perfectly obvious," I said. "I smelled flour, tea, and sugar the moment we came in. Those are normal scents in anyone's house, but tonight they're of a strength that indicates they've been recently dumped from their containers. Overlaid with the odor of rotting vegetables, by which I assume the fridge door has been left open. I keep meaning to eat that kale because it's supposed to be healthy, but I really don't care for it. We can also assume that our intruder is a non-smoker and doesn't apply perfume or aftershave regularly. Unfortunately, it hasn't rained for several days, although the forecast did call for some, so he or she didn't track mud into the house. The flour, an unforgivable oversight on my part. You will, of course, want to take casts of footprints that have tracked through the spilled flour and sugar." "It didn't get on the floor," Estrada said, "but it's all over the counter. As the front door appears to be untampered with, and I don't hand spare keys for my house to all and sundry, I'll assume our intruder came in through the back door. Therefore, the kitchen would be the logical first place to search." "Enough, Gemma," Jane whispered to me. "I only want to point out the obvious facts. I've been told on more than one occasion that some people don't understand my attention to detail and thus misunderstand the conclusions I draw from it. I have tried to stop, but I might as well stop thinking. And this didn't seem like a suitable time in which to stop thinking." "The back door has been forced open, yes," Estrada said. "I'll admit that was a good guess." I was about to inform her that I never guess, but Jane elbowed me in the ribs. I still think, Estrada continued, you know way too much about what went on here when you were supposedly not at home. Never mind the dog. She doesn't seem to have done much to frighten off an intruder. She didn't have to be locked up or restrained while this person broke in and searched your house. That was no curious incident, I said. She's my pet, not a guard dog. What does she care if someone tosses my living room, as long as that person doesn't attempt to abscond with all the dog biscuits? Couple of little Sherlock references in there. If anybody recognized that was no curious incident in the nighttime from A Silver Blaze. And the detective's name is Estrada, which is a play on Lestrade.
Ah, yes. And
Sherlock's
yes,
nemesis.
Yes. Well, many, many thanks, Vicki.
Thank you.
I think it's going to be a huge success. I love it. We've been talking with mystery writer Vicki Delaney, author of several series of cozy mysteries, as well as other kinds of crime novels. So where can listeners buy your books, Vicki?
The books are generally available pretty much anywhere. Chapters, definitely at Books and Company in Picton, online at Chapters. And I just understand there's a nice new bookstore opened up in Coburg, so mm-hmm. if they're listening, perhaps they can get my books in stock. They are
yes.
published by Penguin Random House, and the elementary She Read book is from Crooked Lane, which is a new U.S. publisher, widely distributed in Canada.
Oh. I hear this to be a new festival in Prince Edward County this year, celebrating women crime writers. Could you tell us about that?
Well, I'd be more than happy to. Thank you for asking. Janet Kellow, my good friend and fellow mystery writer, who I believe has been on your program before, mm-hmm. and the idea originated with Janet Kellow, and she called me and asked if I'd like to work on it with her, and I said that was a great idea. So she and I, with the help of various people around Prince Edward County, are putting together Women Killing It, which is a mystery writers festival. It's going to be held, the inaugural event will be Labor Day weekend, in Friday night and the Saturday, that's the 1st and the 2nd of September, at locations around Picton. Our focus is strictly on mystery writers, and our focus, as you can tell by the title of the festival, is on women crime writers, because we believe that women crime writers are very shortchanged when it comes particularly to being invited to literary festivals and to various other things, such as space for reviews and promotion of books. So that is our focus. Women Killing It is the name of the festival. Tickets are now on sale. And as I said, it's going to be the Labor Day weekend in Prince Edward County. And we hope all your some of your readers and your crime lovers in particular would like to come out. And you can see information on who our guest authors are. I should mention it's not Janet and me, although we have a part. We have 9 fabulous women crime writers, Canadian all, coming to our festival. So please look into it. Women Killing It.
It sounds really interesting, and I'm sure that the bookstores around here will like to display those.
That would be great.
And listeners, if you'd like to connect with us and make comments, ask questions, or make suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs, please leave your comment at our website, www.wordonthehills.com. If you've missed a program or would like to listen to one again, you'll find all our broadcasts archived at the website, too. You can listen to them anytime and from anywhere. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, right here on Word on the Hills, Sunday at 1, repeated Thursdays at 1 a.m. on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.